everyone, and welcome to Minute 12 of Season 8 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we FUBAR our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg classic Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is David Brook from Blueprint Review. Welcome back to the show, David.
Hello, back to talk about more blood and guts.
Well, we can continue with the exact blood and guts that we were talking about yesterday. You know, that one wasn't as properly clipped between the minutes. that's the thing with when you do it this style. Sometimes you get stuff that's great, and sometimes, you know, sometimes it cuts things perfectly, and sometimes it doesn't.
Mid-sentences,
yeah. So, well, I wouldn't necessarily call this one mid-sentence, but yeah. I mean, actually, he's screaming money. Maybe that's part of the mid-sentence aspect of it, possibly. I don't know. Don't know. we'll try not to be as gruesome as possible here. We'll do our best, even though, you know, again, it's very funny. I am not a fan of horror movies, you know, mostly because I don't like them. Like, it doesn't bother me, and I'm not able to figure out why. Like, why it doesn't bother me.
Yeah, that's weird. Yeah,
I don't have an explanation for it.
Yeah, you'd have thought, yeah, it's weird. You'd have thought more realistic gore would be worse. But yeah, I don't know. It's quite, I guess there's something I was going to bring it up a little later in this episode, but there's something, it makes it more disturbing, but at the same time, it's not built in the same way that you are with horror films to kind of disgust you. It's not, I guess it's disturbing more than disgusting, which is a different kind of reaction. But what I find in this opening sequence, and definitely we're about to get it in a couple of seconds into this minute, is you get a lot of unceremonious deaths in this. And so there's a lot of unceremonious brutality. So like, I guess we'll get there in a second, but you see someone just on the side of the scene just randomly get shot in the head, dead, gone. It's just, that's one of the things you get a lot in this opening sequence, same part, Ryan. It's just they're just like meat. It's just, they're just off just getting massacred. Yeah, there's no kind of build. I guess in horror movies it kind of makes a big deal out of it, makes a fuss out of it, it milks your emotions to get scared and get disgusted. And yeah.
Well, I think part of the idea here is to show, you know, just the brutality of it all, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, the fact that most of these characters are nameless make it not very personal.
No. Yeah. Yeah. So I was saying, yeah, it's just a cold hard truth sort of thing, which makes it less. Yeah, it's not as gross, but it's more, but at the same time, it can be a Jason Voorhees running around and chopping people up.
Exactly. No, but also with Jason Voorhees, you know who the character is. Yeah. You know, that's the type of thing. Here, it's just, you know, it's just a question of, you know, which of them have a, you know, their name on a bullet, you know.
Yeah.
Type of thing. Yeah. The wounded man from yesterday, Elkins, continuing to scream, and ends with Miller trying to drag Briggs to safety. So, you know, we thankfully only get like 2 seconds of Elkins right here. And then they give us a shot from a different perspective of Miller, you know, trying to get past, you know, everything that's going on. And
that shot kind of breaks my rule I mentioned earlier of being eye levels. It is kind of a little heightened.
Yeah, there's heightened there, but we see him running. And as he's running, we see all the people around him, you know, the way that people are just hiding behind the hedgehogs or
yeah, and you know, bodies around and stuff as well.
And even more so, there are dead fish on the ground.
Yeah.
You know, showing that they've been washed up on shore. And also, like, then Miller shows up next to this guy and he starts talking to him. But on the side, you just see like a body, you know, that's completely bloodied and, you know, goring the whole way. And then, you know, basically we hear some random guy scream, "Stay down." And at this point, Miller then, you know, crouches down next to a guy next to him and he goes, "What are you guys?" And he goes, 104th Medical Battalion, sir. Here to set up field operations. And I always find it really funny because, like, one of these guys has a typewriter. Like, what the hell are you doing with a typewriter in the middle of an invasion? You know? So I thought that was pretty interesting that this is what they give us. You know, they're with a typewriter.
It's a bit of a repeated thing in the film, though. There's a couple of times in the film where Hanks's character gets other characters to drop the kind of rubbish that they're heaving around, especially get with the I'm terrible with names, with the who's the kind of nerdy translatory guy, I can't remember his name. Yeah, Upham. You get a big particularly get a moment with him, but there is, because I don't know if we get to it in this minute or a later minute, but I think he does, doesn't he, tell this guy that he's talking to get rid of the junk that he's carrying on.
He's gonna tell him shortly. Yeah. But I first wanted to mention, you know, so he mentions that he's part of the 104th Medical Battalion. This battalion was actually created during World War One. It's part of the 29th Division, which again is the same division that Miller is part of, right? And so it was created in 1909. And then they ended up, forming based on the 1st, 4th, and 5th Maryland Infantry Regiments. And then in 1915, they separated the group into Field Hospital 1 and Ambulance Company 1. And then in 1916, they were called into service. And then in 1917, when they were organizing to go into World War One. So they were putting together the 29th Division, and they decided to take all the Maryland and Virginia National Guard ambulances and hospital units and put them together to be in the 29th Division. And, you know, they were sent to France at that time. And, you know, they continued staying within that division. You know, through World War II, right? They were actually awarded for the work they did on Omaha Beach. They were awarded the Croix de Guerre with Palm from the French. The French Army gave it to them because for the outstanding medical support that they gave during the D-Day campaign. And they ended up receiving also the U.S. Army Meritorious Unit Commendation, you know, for the European theater. So, I found like the whole history of it. The 29th Division was deactivated in 1968, but then they moved the medical battalion into, an evacuation hospital, the 136th. And their history goes all the way up until today. So I'm not even going to go through the whole thing, but it's just very interesting the way that it all moves along with the whole thing. Now, I find it really funny that this guy has this typewriter because did you know that Tom Hanks is a typewriter collector?
Now you mention it, I think, because I was listening to an interview with him not too long ago, and I think he did bring that up on there. So yeah, I didn't think about that, but yeah.
All right. So there's a film called The California Typewriter, which was released in 2017, which I actually have seen. It's a documentary, and it's all about people who collect typewriters, and Tom Hanks is in it. I was shocked when I saw that. I didn't realize that Tom Hanks was, until I saw it. And at that time, he had more than 250 typewriters in his collection, and that 90% of them are in working order. Wow. And I remember that in this documentary, he mentions the fact of how much he loves, typing up messages to people. Instead of sending them a handwritten note, he would type like handwritten notes and stuff like that. So it was very cool seeing him in this documentary, and then watching this movie and seeing that he's telling a guy to get rid of the typewriter, because
maybe he's telling him to get.
I was thinking the exact same thing. He's like, get rid of that so that I can, I'll come back and get it later, you know, that type of thing. And he actually even created, Hanks created an app for the iPhone that that turns an iPad or an iPhone into a typewriter. And it's known as the Hanks Writer app. And it mimics the sound and feel of using an old-fashioned typewriter, providing the most authentic experience that that is possible with a digital device.
I must admit, I did used to love a good typewriter. I can remember my mom had one when I was a kid. I did used to love using that. There is something satisfying about that big
and
push.
What's really cool is on this app, you can decide to turn off the delete key feature. You know, in order to have to figure out, you know, how to deal with it if that's right.
Get the tip
exactly. That's great. So at this point, Miller yells at him and goes, "Get rid of that crap, so I can pick it up later. Grab yourself some weapons. Follow me." You know, and then he continues moving along, and I mean, one of the this typewriter guy, he actually apparently shows up later in the movie. In the scene with Upham, which is even funnier because Upham also wants to bring a typewriter with him. Oh, okay. You know, so, you know, these are men after Tom Hanks's heart. They know that that's what you need. And like while they're talking, one of the guys like stands up in front of him and gets shot and just like falls back. And they sort of use him as a shield. You know, and you see the way that the body is just getting shot the whole time.
That's the guy I was talking about earlier. Really, it's one of these unceremonious deaths. There's a few in the over the next few minutes, just where it's just like, again, they're just like meat. It's just bang gone. It's just there's no big dramatic sort of moment. It's like boop gone. It's just
completely
disturbing.
That's right. And you know, at this point, Miller just doesn't want to stick around. He actually helps the guy throw away his typewriter. And did you notice what weapon the guy takes?
Oh, no, I'm watching it again now. Is it from the dead guy?
He takes the weapon from the guy who just got shot.
Yeah.
And
he doesn't need it anymore.
No, fair enough. No, not at all. And then, you know, they keep moving, and then we hear another guy scream. And this is a character who we've seen before, but we don't really know who he is, but his name is Briggs. And he screams, "I'm hit! I'm hit!" And Miller looks at him and goes, "Briggs!" And he goes, "Get me out of here! I'm hit low! God!" You know what hit low means, doesn't it?
Well, hit below the...
He's either hitting in the groin or in the abdomen type of thing, you know, and he's got a lot of blood on him with the whole thing. And Miller just looks at him and goes, "Medic!" So the actor who plays Lieutenant Briggs, okay, he has a one on his one stripe. So it's an actor named Rolf Saxon, who was 42 years old when they made this film. He himself has 84 IMDb credits. Going all the way back to the early 80s, he had a small part in the movie The Lords of Discipline. He was in The Dirty Dozen, The Next Mission. He was in Mission Impossible, the original Mission Impossible movie, you know, from 96. And he apparently will be in the Mission Impossible that comes out next summer, you know, in the summer of 25, as the same character. You know, they're bringing back his character for I guess the 30th anniversary or 29th anniversary of it or whatever. And what else was he in? He was in Tomorrow Never Dies. He was in Entrapment.
That's familiar.
So whatever, he has a lot of small parts. He directed one film, which I think was his own film that he did.
Oh, yeah.
And so, I mean, he was 42 when they made this movie. And Rangers were only allowed to be up to the age of 35. So,
I was going to say, because I think Tom Hanks in one of the making ofs, I think he turned,
right,
was it 41 or 42 or something during the shoot? So he was knocking on a little bit as well. But
right. No, but they say that you can assume guy, that but... Miller was around 34, so his character must be around 33. Because they said that that Miller was the oldest man that they had with them there.
Yeah.
We've seen him a few times before, but he's mostly just in the background. He doesn't have anything to say. And basically the idea was that the Germans were shooting, they were always shooting low because they didn't want to miss the various targets. They would rather get, so if you shoot lower, there's more of a chance you're going to hit someone, even if you're just hitting them in the legs or whatever it is. At this point, Miller just looks at him and, screams for a medic, trying to help him out. At this point, this is such a great shot. We see that as Miller is leaning over Briggs, there's Briggs's gun, which is on the side of him, actually gets shot and like flies up in the air. You can see that the 33-second mark. And it's just really, really cool how that happened. I mean, it's scary that thing can happen, but it's just very, very interesting. And he just continues to scream as this is all going on. And, we just see bodies just lying around, there's water splashing all over them. And, Miller is doing what he can to try and help, but there isn't much. And then there's a guy next to him that screams at Miller and says, Navy Beach Battalion, sir, I got to clear these obstacles, make holes for the tanks. And then Miller says to him, all the armor is foundering in the channel. He goes, order, sir, you go somewhere else. I'm clearing this one. So I find it very interesting that at this point they're arguing over who gets to clear this part of the beach.
Yeah.
I think it's the idea that, okay, just whoever can make it, that's what you should be doing.
Yeah, it's all part of the chaos as well. It's like people don't quite know exactly what's going on, who's doing what, because it's just right. Sheer chaos.
That's true. And at this point, Miller realizes that he can't stick around there anymore, so he grabs Briggs and continues to like drag him away, supposedly to safety. Mm-hmm. As he's doing it, and once again, we hear all the bullets buzzing around him, making a lot of sound. And stuff like that. Once again, the chaos of everything that's going on here.
And there's a nice little brutal little touch where you see someone falling kind of near the foreground, and the splash of the water is actually it's blood mixed with water. Obviously, it's just get a big red splash going up as he falls.
I mean, again, the realism that they tried giving us in this movie is just unbelievable. With the whole thing, with the blood, I don't think it's water splashing. It's the guy gets shot. You're talking about
he falls into the water. He falls down and then there's a big splash up. I mean, it's mainly blood, but it's a bit too. You'd have thought it's mixed with water from the beach as well.
It's a combination of both. Okay, right. No.
Near enough.
Yeah. 57 seconds. I saw that too.
There's an interesting shot as well. I've lost it now. At 34, there's a bit of a cant angle where it's at a slight offset angle where you see there's a dead soldier in the foreground just as he's reaching Briggs. It's quite an interesting shot through.
I mean, again, just to choreograph this whole thing is just it just boggles the mind how someone can do it so well. Yeah. And continuity. Think about that.
Yeah, and there's not they might have had a bit of computer assistance in there here and there, but most of this is practical. It's stunts, squibs, explosions. Something like this was absolutely madness.
It's great to watch the way that it all what they've given us. They've given us basically, in my opinion, a masterpiece. Just looking at the way this all is. They distort some of the some of the light and stuff like that also here, dragging Briggs away, trying to get into safety. Yeah, and that's the way this minute ends. So, did you have anything else you want to say about this minute, David?
No, I think so, yeah, well covered already. So yeah.
Okay. All right. So every Tuesday we have a segment called Tom Hanks Tuesday. where my guests will give their top five Tom Hanks performances. So once again, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
This is another tricky one.
Well, I don't make these things easy. Come on.
No. I always struggle to put things in the order, because Tom Hanks is a great actor. He's done a lot of good stuff. Number five, I almost didn't put this in because I haven't seen the film for ages. I can't really remember it that much, but I wanted to put it in because I think it's a film that kind of links Tom Hanks's early comedic performances with his kind of more dramatic roles that he tends to do more often these days, although he does mix a bit more nowadays. It's not films. And as I say, it's been probably too long for me to talk in too much detail about it. It's a drama about stand-up comedians, and it's Sally Field is the lead, I think, pretty much. But Tom Hanks is kind of co-star, and from what I remember, it's a powerful performance, and it uses his comic skills whilst also creating a dramatic character with some quite moving sequences. So I wanted to put that in there, even if I don't remember it, a little bit different. Number four, I've gone with Philadelphia, which is kind of it is probably the first time he kind of got recognized for his performance as a dramatic actor, even though he'd done great stuff before this, and rightfully so. I think it's although it's a you could say it's a bit of an Oscar baity sort of role. But he does it very well. I think it's a very powerful performance. Then number three, I wanted to put some of his comedy in there because people don't give comedians enough respect for his sort of comic roles, and I had to go with kind of a film that I loved as a kid and still enjoy watching now, and that's Big. And his performance is underrated in this because he really nicely captures that. That balance of play, because he's playing a child in a man's body, and it's he does it really, really well. It's probably more difficult than you think to pull this off in a believable way, and he does it brilliantly. It's a fantastic performance, and a great film. And then number two, I'm gonna go with Castaway, because so much of the film just relies on him, obviously, because he's the only fit person in it for a good chunk of it. And he does a damn good job. It's a pleasure to watch him in it. It's excellent. And then number one, I'm going to go with Saving Private Ryan. I think it may be helped by the fact that it was the most recent one that I've seen, and I just forgotten how good he was in the film. I just think, I think he does an excellent job. People think too much go on about the action scenes and things in the film, but I think the performances and the cast are another. Definitely worth mentioning. I forgot how good the cast was in this film. There's loads of I think a lot of them weren't quite famous yet. There's a lot of people who became famous afterwards, and rightfully so. But Tom Hanks shines. He's kind of the rock and the center of the film, and he does an excellent job without doing any. He doesn't have any showy kind of showy moments, or he has one or two kind of monologue type sequences, but nothing that pushes it too far, which is what I like. I like a performance that's a bit more grounded, and Hanks does it perfectly. So I got that at number one.
That is definitely fair. Thank you very much for that list. So David, would you like to once again tell people where they can find David Brooke?
Yeah, I do many, many film reviews over at blueprintreview.co.uk, and we're also currently resurrected the podcast, which is the Blueprint Review podcast.
Right. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com, and if you'd like to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, earn this.
Solitude.